So, Berto, I thought today we would just read listener and patron emails and respond to them. What do you say?
That sounds like a plan.
Today we have a special guest with us, Chad. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, Chad Bronstein.
Yeah? What do you do?
I have a small business.
What's it called?
It's called Time to Hire.
What does it do?
We help companies find commission-only salesmen.
So they should go to timetohire.com.
Yes.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm chair of the Couple and Family Therapy Program at Antioch University, Seattle, and I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist.
My name is Humberto Castañeda. I'm an architect, and I specialize on Bauhaus.
So before we talk about listener emails, I just want to mention that I was on the Station Wagon podcast with Mark and Julie. The Station Wagon podcast is a short, entertaining podcast, unlike this podcast, in that they talk about various different topics. I think they're both psychologists. I know Julie is, and they're researchers, and I believe. This is a terrible plug because I actually don't really know that much about them, but I know that
they do something.
I know that the Station Wagon podcast is what it's called. Station Wagon podcast. They're lovely people.
Wow.
Funny, entertaining, quick. I want to plug for them. Plus, I was on it, and if they have me on it, then they
And it's gone downhill. It's jumped the shark.
They've got it. They need help at this point. So, all right. All right. Patron Michelle wrote in, and she said, "Hello, Kirk and gang." That's you, Berto.
That's me.
A requested topic for a future podcast would be adults who were sexually assaulted by a family member as children.
Oh, my God.
I'd like to hear your thoughts on treatment and how others can be supportive, especially when the victim is resistant to therapy. Berto, I didn't ask you about this before we started recording, but did you want to talk about your own story?
Sure. I mean, it wasn't a family member, but it was someone that was trusted to guard me.
Yeah, your babysitter.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about it before, but basically, it was when I was 5 years old living in New York. Anyway, sometimes I would get babysat by the niece. And she was 12 when I was 5, right? And unfortunately, me and this other little boy, who was, I guess, her cousin, must be, yeah. She would entice us to do stuff with her that was sexual and introduce us to concepts that were very confusing, but also we felt like we were being included in a special club. And then we would kind of compare notes, sort of like him and I would be like, oh, you know, and I just remember feeling like, I don't know what this is. I don't know why, but I guess this is cool and I feel special, right? And it was also like a secret. Like you don't talk about it with adults. And so it kind of became a secret thing. Like I remember one time, I don't know why, but there was like a sleepover thing and we were at a hotel with like all the adults and stuff. Like we were all staying at a beach or something. And I was like, okay, I had to take a shower because I guess we went in the ocean. So I was like, oh, can I take a shower with her, you know, with the girl? And I remember the adults being like, I guess, you know, like, but, and I didn't realize that by saying something like that, it might make someone wonder. But at the same time, I just, you know, you don't know anything at 5. So,
right.
And the adults didn't seem to actually pick up on anything either. So it was really bizarre. And later in life, it occurred to me that she was probably abused. You know, it was maybe not for sure, but she probably was abused. And that's why maybe she was so, you know, aggressive and kind of abusing us.
Yeah.
She wasn't physically, meaning she didn't hit us or anything. It was all sexual. But
yeah. Were there any effects on your psychology and behavior later on?
I do believe so. I mean, I basically, for example, even when I was, I remember I was 7 years old and maybe I was, yeah, like 7 years old and I had a little girlfriend. We weren't boyfriend, girlfriend yet, but she was a girlfriend and she was 8. I think she was 1 year older. And we were in a ride, like the adults were driving the car. We were both in the back seat. And I just started putting my hand down the back of her pants. And she was like, she just looks over at me and she's like, what are you doing? Because, you know, at eight, it's like, what the hell? If you haven't gone through it. Yeah. Whereas I thought, like, that's what you do. I don't know. That's, isn't that what you do? And so I was like, I took my hand out. I was like, I don't know. And it was really awkward. And so there was stuff like that. But I didn't think much of it. And nothing really, I don't think nothing really manifested until I was much older. Like, I was, you know, out of high school, actually. And, and to me, the way it manifested is, acting out sexually in dangerous situations, you know, where I, looking back on it, at the time I didn't think, at the time I just like, oh, I'm doing whatever, you know? But then in retrospect, it was like, oh, whoa, I was just reenacting my abuse, but like maybe doing it when I have the power, but it's not like I planned any of it. It was just like, just in the hindsight 2020, it seems like I was putting myself in not safe situations. And when you look at what was happening, it was like the same sexual type of behavior and things like that. So my only conclusion was, all right, so I must have been role playing out that abuse, and this time I was in control, sort of.
Right.
But it wasn't ultimately healthy, so I had to, like, you know, when I started going to therapy, I talked about some of this. It was actually kind of hard for me to talk about it with my therapist because she's a female, and. Over time, I got more comfortable, but at first it was a little, like, awkward, you know, maybe to go into details and stuff. And so, anyways, it also affected how I treated how my boundaries with women that I would know or meet and stuff like that. And not in all, like, oddly, not in all circumstances. It was actually it just in specific types of relationship like arrangements, meaning that's really hard to understand. But what I mean is this, in some power differential situations, like maybe
a boss or something.
See, like if it, nothing ever happened at work, luckily, but it was more like if it was a situation where it was someone I wasn't supposed to like act out with, like someone's girlfriend or something like that. Right. Or like I said, or like a stripper, or like, you know, just things where it might be too risky, or it might just not, like, you're breaking some boundary and stuff like that. And it definitely caused some unknown, like I was unaware that I was having behaviors that were, not right. And then that they were probably caused by a lot of that. Yeah. And then over the years, I finally started looking back on it and thinking, oh, whoa, yeah, I can't do this, and started modifying my behavior.
But, yeah.
Definitely took a lot of introspection.
So you've had a long path regarding this, and you've healed from the trauma or the difficulty or the abuse, and you've also learned how to not act out anymore in ways that are destructive to yourself and other people.
Yeah, that's right. And something happened last year where I don't know why, but I came to this like full circle thing where I had this desperate desire to locate this person online.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you tell me about this?
No, I don't. Oh, I might have, but not on the podcast.
Okay.
But anyways, I did sleuthing, you know, Facebook and other stalking. And actually, she wasn't on Facebook. She was, but I think I found the person. And of course, I'm not going to name anyone, but I think I found the person. And ironically, she is a therapist.
Really?
If it's this person, it's, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it would be hard for it.
What if she listens to the show?
I don't know. I don't know. And so here's how I went this far. I actually called her house. And luckily, actually, I think her husband picked up.
Yeah.
And I asked for her, and he said, who is this? It's like, oh, just an old friend. And he said, but she's not here. Why are you calling? What is this about? And I could tell he was like very like immediately like weirded out. But, and it's not like I said, yo, is, you know, it was like I was being very professional sounding, but still he was immediately like, wait, who is this? What is this about? And I don't know what that was about, but I basically just said, well, I just, you know, I knew her from many years ago. He's like, no, I don't think you can call here. No. And I was like, well, could you leave a message for her? He's like, no, I can't. No.
What?
And I was like, okay. And so, and then that was the end of that.
Whoa.
Yeah. So then I didn't try again, and I finally just like said, I'm probably done with this inquiry.
Huh. That's interesting. That is suspicious.
Yeah, and my fantasy in my head was I would contact her and we would have a adult, healthy conversation about what had happened and it would be healing. But I'm
the,
sure it would
the reality.
Yeah,
that's too bad. That's too bad. Well, you're a brave person to talk about on the podcast.
This is being recorded?
I'm sure people will benefit from it. And you exemplify the complexity and the lifespan of this kind of abuse and how at the time it wasn't like you were being held down or you know, at gunpoint or something. No. And you even kind of thought you were in a special club. But the early sexualization of a child. And then also, as you aged, I'm guessing you realized, wait, I was being exploited.
Oh, totally. To be clear, up until like maybe 19 or so, I always thought of the whole thing as like kind of funny. Like, you know, I wouldn't talk about it. But the first time I told a friend, I think I had graduated high school maybe. And it was like, oh yeah, dude, this thing happened to me. Ha, huh? You know, like, isn't that crazy? I had not processed it and I didn't have like the tools to think about it in the context of abuse. I just thought of it like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, when I was younger, I kind of thought like, oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
You know, you know, it's weird. I ran into her when I was 12 years old and she must have been 17 or something like that. I ran into her in a random party that like there was no reason on earth why she would have been there. But it turns out there was some weird someone knew someone that knew someone. And I was like so shocked when I saw her. But I wasn't like scared. So, you know, in a lot of abuse situations, I could imagine if it was physical or violent and things like it would probably be so traumatic to see the person. This was very different. I all of a sudden felt like, oh, I know. And I know that you know. And so I remember like looking at her and trying to make eye contact. And I kind of remember her like trying to avoid eye contact. But then it was really weird. It was like, and that, you know, I think we exchanged like two words or something. And she definitely did not acknowledge. She pretended not to know me, sort of.
Huh.
But at the same time, kind of not. It was really weird. And I obviously, it's a long time ago. So I might have been misremembering, but that was the last time I ever saw her. And it had been, 7 years since I had seen her. Yeah. So it was weird, but
yeah. Well, so patron Michelle asks about treatment and about how to be supportive. And it's a complex issue, but in general, treatment, it depends on the nature of the trauma reaction. Some people have PTSD, simple PTSD or complex PTSD. You could develop personality disorders like borderline. You can develop addictions or you can have attachment injuries and other kinds of things like that. And so it really depends. The treatment is very varied. For you, the kind of treatment you had was non-PTSD related because it seems like you didn't have PTSD. It was more related to the awareness of how the early sexualization was affecting essentially your urges and your moral compass.
Yep.
And becoming aware of that and how to manage that was your path.
Yeah.
And being validated for having the feelings of hurt and exploitation that you had and just having someone understand that. That's one path. But there are many other kinds of paths for people.
Sure.
For instance, if you had been sexually abused by your mother for 10 years, that's a different kind of of condition in all likelihood.
Yikes.
So whereas it's if you're raped in an alley when you're 35 and that's the first time you've been sexually abused, then that's another different potential treatment path. So it really just depends. But so listen to the other episodes where I talk about that kind of stuff. And generally speaking, when we want to help people, we need to help them to heal from the abuse. That's the main thing. Whatever, you know, abuse causes essentially psychic injury, and so healing is the thing. And therapy can be a wonderful venue for that, but secure relationships can help, and so can self-help, which, again, I won't go into. But let me ask you guys, how can we be supportive when the survivor is resistant to therapy? You know, Berto, you might be able to relate from the other side of this or both sides, but how can we be supportive when an abusive, when you, you know, you know an abuse survivor and they're very resistant to therapy? How can we be supportive, do you think?
I would say listening.
Yeah. Let's say I'm in my 20s and I cross a boundary that I shouldn't have. And my friend whose boundary I crossed is now really upset at me and says, you need treatment, right? Mm-hmm. I could imagine me being like, well, you're weird and crazy. Sorry I did whatever, but whatever. And this like cuts two ways. On the one hand, I never thought that I was doing anything wrong whenever I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
I just thought I was like, whatever, it's a party or I'm drunk or whatever. Like, what's the big deal? Can we all just get along, right? And in a way, it was like I really wasn't. You know, this wasn't planned behavior. It was, I was like acting out programming in a way, right? But at the same time, I was an adult and so from the receiving end, like people that have to experience the re-abuse, they, you know, from the one hand, it's really a lot to expect from them to say, hey, understand the context here, right? But the sad thing is that without understanding the context, it might be really hard to help someone get help. Yeah. Because let's say you're part of that family. And let's say, in fact, you can imagine this weird dynamic where the adult abuses the older sibling, and then the older sibling starts abusing the younger sibling, right? And it creates just like a whole mess of chaos. If anyone in that family is trying to help, it could be really easy to point fingers at the middle child as well, right? And of course, in some ways, you have to stop the behavior because now they're abusing the younger sibling. But you kind of have to take into account what triggered and how it happened in order to be able to even recommend help or help, which can be so hard. I could only imagine being in a family like that and being angry and you know.
Yeah. The general advice I have is similar to what Chad, you're saying, is being a good friend and listening to people. But the primary thing that I can say, this is based on fielding questions like this over my career, is that people need to understand that healing takes a long time. And there's not like a single thing you could do. Even if you manage to somehow convince the person to go to therapy, it's not like them going to therapy for even like a few months is going to cure them, is going to be the entire healing for them. So it takes a lifetime. Like Berto, with you, your brief synopsis of your path is 40 plus years, or, you know, 35 plus years or something.
I'm only 25.
And so we're talking about a long path of therapy and thinking and acting. And, you know, you acted out after you were in therapy. So it wasn't like therapy fixed you.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And so, and as with all things in life, it takes experience and wisdom and, you know, just having people care about us and realization things. I'm 45. I'm a therapist. I've been looking at my own psyche since I was quite young, which is what led me to psychology in the first place. And I'm still boggled at the things that I'm learning about myself that I didn't know before. I will say, I'm a therapist. I teach this shit. I should know this about myself. And so it takes a long time. So as a friend of someone who is resistant to therapy, understand that there's nothing you can do in an intervention, you know, way that's going to solve 90% of the issue. You know, the best thing you can do, like Chad said, is just be a good friend, listen, and be there for them. That can do a tremendous amount for people. And if you want to, you know, slip in a comment now and then of like, hey, you know, therapy might help, then by all means do that. But don't lay into them or don't be forceful or judgmental if they don't go.
You know, one thing that could help is if that person trying to help has gone to therapy themselves, is to, instead of saying, hey, you might want to go to therapy, just not even say that, but say something like, well, yeah, man, it's got to be so tough. Like, for example, you know, I don't know if you know this, but I go to therapy. And one of the things I've been dealing with, you know, like, it's kind of like that, because then it does a couple of things.
Right.
One of them is the other person might be like, whoa, you go to therapy? And second, they're like, oh, it's helping you? Because I got to tell you, when I was in my 20s, I looked down on going to therapy. You know, and I, even though my dad was a psychiatrist, my stepdad is a psychiatrist, and for some reason, you know, they're not necessarily therapists, but my mindset was, if I needed therapy, there's something really wrong with me. Well, guess what? There was kind of something really wrong with me, and I needed therapy. But the thing that triggered me, as I've talked about in podcasts before, it was a panic attack. If I hadn't had a panic attack, I probably wouldn't have gone to therapy because I was like, who needs it, right?
Interesting. The other thing I'll say in conclusion is you also need to protect yourself. As a friend of someone who has been abused, not only is it painful to watch them suffer and to be unhealed from that abuse, it's also potentially true that you are going to be the recipient of some kind of abuse or some kind of pain being around that person. And so if that's the case, you have the right to protect yourself from that within reason. There are a lot of people I find that write emails like this, like Patriot Michelle. They're very nice people and they're very giving people and they are self-sacrificial. And I don't think that that's fair to people that are around people. So, you know, protect yourself.
Like karate or?
Karate.
Karate.
Karate. Well, that does it for this episode of Psychology in Seattle. I thought we were going to talk about more emails, but Berto's story was so interesting that we stuck with it for a while. So that does it for this episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us out there. Please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.